American Republic, out of 193 countries listed on the Human Thriving Index, there's actually one out there, it is 191 out of 193. So it's basically one of the worst countries in the world to live. You can sort of see some of it from the pictures, but it's not until you're there that you know, you feel, you understand why it's at 191 out of 193. But as Chris mentioned, the Lord has given us CAR, we hope, all of it, but certainly a brother there who's one of the few faithful ministers in that country. Now, the country is about the twice the size, I think, of Texas, or fits into Texas. It's big. So it's way bigger than any state you would think of. So we were there, got on an airplane on a Saturday, and came home eventually getting home on a Monday. So when we left, it was nice and warm. When we got back, it was like 20 degrees or something, and the airplane we took to get home from Washington was like minus 20 degrees. Anyway, it was an interesting trip. So what you see there is it's taken from up on top of a hill in Sabut in Central African Republic, and this is Jonathan's house. It's the orphanage that we sort of, actually Gwen sort of found it. There was a lady who used to go to our Bible study at our house where this church really started, and she went to that Bible study, and Gwen was sort of doing her Facebook thing, and the story may not be true. She could tell her story in better detail, but she ended up bumping into her because she'd also bumped into Jonathan's house, which is the name of this. So we ended up knowing Donna Bixby, who is, you'll see a picture of her, who is the one who is was a French teacher here in Greenville and now is running Jonathan's house from a very high level. There are people there that actually run the show there, but she's sort of above them, the umbrella of it all. And so it was just an interesting set of connections. So anyway, that house you see there is what became our dormitory, which has many memories, most of them interesting. Anyway.
Yeah, no, I'm sure Steve will tell you about flicking the bed bugs off, the stink bugs off in the middle of the night. That was part of the whole experience, so it's essential.
I'll also tell you that I suggested we have mosquito nets, and I was told no.
There will definitely be some, and then there weren't.
So if you feel some angst from me, it was from the stink bug night we had at that house. Anyway,
it's coming next one.
Yeah. So this is Central African Republic. It's directly in the middle of Africa. It's landlocked. Africa is the poverty there is desperate, and there's reasons for it. It has no deep water port, and as long as that coastline is around the whole of Africa, it has no deep water port, and so it can't really enter into global trade. When you get from sort of that top part of Africa where the Sahara Desert is, and you start moving down into the southern part, of course you can't live in the Sahara Desert. But as you start moving down, it's on a plateau. So any place you might land in Africa and you go about 50 to 100 miles inland, you get all the beautiful rivers, right? And all the beautiful waterfalls, right? Well, that's because it goes up on a plateau. Well, guess what that does if you want to have global trade? You can't go inland for shipping. We have the Mississippi River Valley in our country with all of the tributaries. We have one of the most blessed features of our country is that it made the middle America, but Africa has none of that, and that's why it's really doomed to be poor, and we have to remember that. Also, when you get into Central African Republic down, you're in a place where there's tsetse flies, just massive amounts of these flies, so it's really hard to raise cattle, which means they have no beef really as part of their diet. It's really hard to get protein in these places. And then there's all these exotic diseases. In the 1800s, if you signed up to be a missionary to Africa, it was basically a death sentence in many cases because of the diseases. Africa is a very tough place to live. But here is the country. Below it's the Democratic Republic of the Congo. That's in the news a lot. And South Sudan, Chad, Sudan, those are all places that are kind of war-torn. Remember that Africa is the new colonialism. Russia, China, China has their Belt and Road. Russia has their Africa Corps. Africa is the place to go for minerals. And so it's a real crossroads of neocolonialism. So, next picture.
Yeah, and I would just say, too, when you get to the Democratic Republic is where you get into the very jungle sort of part of Africa, and sort of CAR is sort of a transition between the jungle and then more of what they kind of refer to as like the bush, or, you know, it's sort of a transitional one. So the bottom parts of Central Africa can feel very jungle-ish, and then it sort of changes as it goes up.
Now, the cities that are significant for us are the capital, Bangui, and its sort of sister city. You know, you might see a sign you're in Bimbo, but you wouldn't know if you didn't see the sign. They're just sort of the same thing. So Bangui and Bimbo, Bangui's the capital, has about 700,000, I'm just sort of guessing. And Bimbo has about 400,000. Total, it's about 1 million people in that particular area. It's a fifth of the population lives there. And Bimbo is where Andre, you'll be seeing him in a bit, Andre, the brother and pastor that we are associated with, is in that place.
Yeah, and if you look across the river from Bangui, you can see Democratic Republic of the Congo. So, yeah, it's right there, right across the river. You can see the other country.
Sabut is about 70 to 100 miles. I can never figure it out as I look at sort of map distances. But 70 to 100, I know what it was like to drive. It was, what, two and a half hours up there to Sabut. It's an old French, because this used to be a French colony, by the way. That's why they speak French. The French were not known for being nice colonizers, relatively speaking. And Sabut was one of their fortress towns. The French left, you know, a good while ago. And that is where Jonathan's house is located. So that's the big orphanage that we have been considering supporting since we've gotten back. Berberati is about, I guess, 200 miles west of Bangui. It's definitely a two-day trip if you're going to go there. Berberati is the place where Maria Lean lives. We sort of met her through the Bible translators some years ago, and as Chris said, she had a de facto orphanage. She was well known in the town. She was a magnet for the young people, just well respected. And our first really encounter with them, they were asking us to help them build fish ponds because they need protein. And so we, as a church, gave them, I think in the end, $2,400. And the ladies, because the men in Central African Republic tend to not do much work, all the ladies went out and they built 5 fish ponds. 3 of them are still functioning today. 1 got robbed. That's things that can happen. And 1 kind of just went defunct. So we may be asking if they need more money to repair those 2 fish ponds. But that's a huge deal for them. So this lady was a go-getter. Well-respected, as it says about Timothy in Acts 16, well-reported of by all the brethren. She was well-reported of. And also, Andre, I found out, was born in Berberati. It's where his family's located. So anyway.
Yeah, and he spent a lot of time in Berberati. I know Adam and spent a lot of time with Andre in Berberati. And then during time, like, you see the distances doesn't look too far between Bangui and Berberati, but during, like, especially the rainy season, it's almost inaccessible and cut off from the rest of the country because the road systems are just almost, like, they become impassable. So it gets really logistically tricky different times of year. So, yeah.
And also from a security point of view, even though the fighting died down, to go from Bangui to Berberati, the Bible translators would have to get a trip from the UN airplanes. They couldn't go on their own to go there. It wasn't safe at all. So anyway. And then Nola, south of Berberati, about 70, 80 miles, maybe 100 miles. And this is where They have started, they started with a little Bible study and prayer group, and it's been growing. And so it's somewhat of a church plant in NOLA. And in between Berberati and NOLA, there'll be some other Benaweo, a few other places, Mgobeki. They have all these ends in front of things. So it's kind of hard. So this is what it looks like: Benaweo, NOLA, Berberati, Bimbo, Bangi. Gramari is a place where there's another good pastor who is associated and good friends with Andre, who's in Bimbo.
Yeah, and there's some lists of some of the different people who are involved at these different places that Andre is in contact with, that are sort of the leaders in these different locations.
Yeah, so Bangi, Bimbo, that's where we went to the international airport at Bangi and went there and left from there, and we took a one-day visit from Bangi, overnight visit actually, to Subut. Went midday on Thursday and came back midday or late afternoon on Friday. So this is sort of a close-up. Andre's neighborhood is to the west. There you see Bimbo, if you can read that. Bangi and Bimbo are there. Bangi's to the east or to the right on the map there. And he's on a secondary river that's a tributary of the main Ubangi River that separates CAR from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or better known as the DRC. And there are, including Andre's gathering, there are six gatherings around that area. You can sort of see the numbers. There's Andre's gathering, there's Gorbarata, then one they call the project, the City Liberté, the Poco Bakuk, and the Poco Zalang. And so Andre sort of is the main sort of leader of all those gatherings, and then in each gathering there's individual leaders who sort of guide things. Our objectives: when we wanted to meet Andre in person. We'd been writing to him and corresponding with him and being on WhatsApp with him for years, so we wanted to meet him face to face. We wanted to deliver hut hangers, which I had all out and forgot to bring. That's its own story, so we'll tell it later. Michael and I dreamed up what we call hut hangers. Cooked it up one day and thought it was a good idea. Hut hanger, basically, we have these laminated sheets that people can hang in their huts. And it's double-sided, and it's just one of them is what is the gospel, and the other one is how to live under Christ. Just basic stuff.
Yeah, one side in English, and then the other side in French, and then also
Songo.
Yeah, a Songo translation, which is a local dialect.
We also wanted to have a teaching time with Andre. He had some questions, so we wanted to have some Q&A with him. We wanted to learn, as Michael has phrased it, learn CAR survival. What does it take to go there and function? Should we ever want to go on a trip again, we'll be more clear on what to expect. And I will say, I did not survive as well as others, but...
But he did survive.
Yeah. We wanted to visit Jonathan's house, who we had recently encountered through Gwen. We wanted to establish a printing connection. That is, if we have material that we want to disseminate to them and for them to disseminate themselves, we wanted to see if we could get them someplace that could print stuff. And then we wanted to meet Maria Lean from Berberati. So here we have Andre. There's me and Michael with Andre in the middle. He is just such a great brother. He's, you talk about a definition of meekness. You know, I was trying to present meekness on something for the ladies anyway, a few months from now, and I wish I could just bring him in for an hour and say, I don't need to define it for you. Here is a picture of a meek and mild brother. Just faithful to the Lord, meek and mild, great pastor, amazing guy. And there he is with his wife. That's just how they dressed at that time. They dressed differently other times. They look like maybe they work in a hospital, but they don't. And so that's in their house, the picture on the right. Picture on the left is at the place we were staying. There's Andre's motorcycle. Some years ago, we bought two motorcycles for them. because motorcycles are the only way you can travel really in that country. You could have a car, but you know, $50,000 for a car is really out of our price range, that's for sure. So we bought them two motorcycles, and they used them. About a year or so ago, I think it was, one of the motorcycles was stolen. This is the one that's left, and we'll be talking soon about getting him a new motorcycle. Now there's his house, Andre's house, when you go to it. And if you look up building codes in Bimbo, they haven't put them out yet. So it's build at your own pleasure and live in it at your own risk. On the top right is a space between, sort of a courtyard between his house that he built himself, by the way, and where the church meets, a very simple building where the church meets. And that was where after the church meeting we went to with them, there was there must have been 70, 100 people there all together.
Yeah, there's quite a few.
Lots of kids, we had fun with them. Couldn't speak their language, but they were all smiles, so we had a good time with them. Lots of fist bumps, et cetera, to communicate. The bottom right picture is his living room. And Michael and I, as we are sitting in the chairs are kind of to the left there, we kept our eye on that ceiling. Because it was interesting, a little bit of water dripping from it. It was interesting. And on the right are the bags of all the stuff we brought for them. We brought hut hangers and a bunch of leftover food. I got sick. I was sick, massively sick with the flu the whole time. So they got all my food I had brought. So I was glad for that. Not for being sick, but for giving them the food.
Lots of nuts.
Yeah, nuts and beef jerky, et cetera.
Yeah. All right. Let me try this real quick and make sure that we've got audio, because I may need to switch my audio settings. Hold on. Let's see. Nope, we got it. So this is outside of Andre's house. That's the church building that you can see over there. And then kind of the little courtyard.
That's here. Water on the floor from the rain the night before.
Play it just so we can show you. Yeah, so this little white building over there is the church building. The yellow is the taxi driver we just paid for the day to sit there so that we would have a ride. So he like slept in the taxi while he listened to the whole church service going on.
Yeah, now you hear this music, right? Andre is a great person you'd want as a neighbor. However, when they do church service, he puts his big speaker in the window and the whole neighborhood gets to hear the songs.
Yeah. He will also go up onto his roof and do like open air evangelism with a megaphone to his entire neighborhood. So here's another. I think this video is inside his house. So this is when we were sitting and waiting for the church service to begin, which was going to be an ordination service for Andre. So we were in the holding area while he was blasting the music out to the neighborhood to let everybody know that they need to come. It's time now. So
who was the guy sitting
beside? It was Adam.
Adam Hutley. Yeah.
Yeah, that was Adam. So we'll go to the next one, I think. There we go.
Okay, now, here I am. I had the flu the whole week when I wasn't up doing something I needed to do. I was trying to sleep it off. And so I find out, Thursday or Friday when we got back? I don't know. Friday when we got back.
Because this is towards the end of the trip. We're going a little out of order just because it's to do with Andre. But, this is at the end of the trip.
Andre is very interesting because he hesitates. They've got that very polite European approach to things, so very hesitant to say anything. So he's so hesitant that I didn't know till Friday that on Saturday, this is Saturday where this happened, he wanted us to ordain him. He had been ordained as a deacon, but not ordained as a pastor. So I agreed, okay, I'm sick. I can't even hardly stand up, but we'll go. I'll preach. I had to get a message together and go and preach at this for his ordination, and then we actually ordained him. We didn't get a lot of pictures because Michael was part of this, And interestingly, when they finally turned the speakers into the building instead of to the neighborhood, it was great singing. Over on the right, you may look all the way sort of in the middle. There's very small. They have a djembe. Okay? Now, guys, I think we need to start doing this here. Whenever I preached and I said something that apparently they liked, somebody would jump up out of the crowd and go on the djembe. So, djembe next week, we're going to put it right front up here for whoever's preaching. I had finished preaching at that point. We were ordaining him, and they do it very differently than us. Of course, we weren't informed of that. And so we're trying to figure out, okay, ordain him. He wants to be on this tarp, and he wants us to pour oil on his head. And he's kind of bald, so we're like, okay, how is this going to work? The oil coming everywhere. But it was a good time, and this was just for them. This was huge, because a leader in that place is much more regarded than a leader in America. Leaders in churches not only just hold the church together, they pretty much hold the social fabric together. It's just, they just have a different place in society than in America. And he was just so thrilled, wasn't he? I mean, he was just to the moon.
He was beaming, for sure. Yeah. And one of the things I think we realized, too, was that he did not, they have these very structured kind of denominations and different churches, and they have to be that way for sort of like government registration purposes so that they're allowed to have meetings. And so he's kind of on his own outside of all of these different more official, sort of denominations. And so this ordination, it couldn't have been done by any other people because he wanted it to be done by us. And because we were coming from the United States, their government is like, yeah, sure, it's totally official, you know? So they, like, there's an interesting sort of dynamic there. And so there's actually, like, there was formal paperwork and things that we actually had to do that he was then able to take. And so then, because he had some concerns about he could be considered labeled a disturber of the peace if he wasn't an official, officially ordained minister. He's been going out and doing it anyway, but this will sort of help him in what he's trying to do. So that was one of the main things we kind of learned.
Yeah, and that was on a Tuesday. He kept saying he kept having these papers, and they're all in French, so we didn't know what they were. And we finally figured out, oh, we have to sign these papers so that he can be a registered church. But in order for him to be a registered church, apparently, unknown to us until after, we also got registers as a denomination. So we are not only a church, folks, we are a denomination. Just remember, tell people, yep, we've got a denomination, and we have 8 churches around the world. so that was good, yeah. Now, this is in the place where we sort of stayed. It's called MEF, which is the Mission Evangelique des Frères, which means the evangelistic mission of the brothers. So sometimes we'll refer to it as MEF or as the Bongi House where we stayed. There's a picture, by the way, of the hut hangers. So I was just sort of going over the hut hangers with him, about what their purpose is. And
staying here was kind of interesting because you would have other people who were here for sort of missions-oriented work in CAR or sometimes nonprofit organizations. Like there was a guy there who was with an organization that was drilling wells and doing that
water.
Sort of stuff. Yeah, Water for Life, I think, was maybe the name of that organization.
Not oil.
Yeah, so you get to kind of sort of rub shoulders with the different people who are there doing work in CAR because it's one of the only places that is close to Western standards, I guess you could say, in the country. And I'm using that very loosely. But yeah, so that's where a lot of the people would come through and stay. There's not a lot of like tourism. There's not like a hotel you can sort of book yourself into that would be equivalent to a Super 8 or anything like that. So this is one of the only places in town. Adam kept making that joke to us, like, hey, just remember, this is the nicest place in town. So
And there was a reason he kept having to say that. And here we are again. This is where we were actually sort of doing some Bible study with him. We asked him, you know, what he wanted to talk about with us, and his greatest concern was Israel. And what it is in Bangi, as you drive around, I mean, it's a big city, but you drive around everywhere, there are these churches, and they're clearly kind of Pentecostal-oriented. But the big thing there is, you know, the rapture and all those things. Dispensationalism with a CAR twist, I'm sure, on it. So he was very confused about that. He really didn't know what to believe. So we went through that. And we had brought, by the way, a monitor. You can see the monitor that he's looking at there. And we left that with him. That turned out to be a really good purchase, $150. That was a great monitor. Worked out great for sharing stuff with him. So we spent over a three-day period, we spent a lot of time with him in these sessions. And we'll just have to say that Andre's a great brother, great pastor, knows his Bible. Anytime Chris and I have talked with him, you ask him a question, he knows his Bible. No question about it. But they're not analytical. They're just not used to, or he's certainly not used to, an analytical approach to Scripture. So the doctrine of the second coming, or what is the place of Israel in the scheme of God, or of the church in the scheme of God, he just didn't think in those categories. So it was kind of a challenge. So we read through Ephesians, and there was one verse he was really excited about. Anyway, so he got excited about one verse anyway, so we're happy about that.
Yeah, and having Adam there was invaluable, just because there would be times when, you know, there would be a concept that Steve would be trying to explain. Andre would sort of be struggling, one, to kind of either understand the concept or understand, because English is obviously not his first language. So then Adam would be able to, as somebody who knows the Scriptures and knows his language, was able to sort of get, you know, bridge the gap between the two, which is invaluable for sure.
We're totally grateful he came with us. He was our tour guide, basically. Ah, the food. Okay, there's their bed. In the bottom left are the bedrooms where I think that's where, no, that's, those are the bedrooms.
That's in Cebu.
Yeah, that's the stink bug bedrooms. On top of it is, I don't know, some creature they came up with to eat. Adam and Michael came up with to eat. I was so sick, I couldn't eat anything, for which I was very glad when I would see these plates of food. I survived on Dagino orange drink. I went to import some of that stuff. It was great.
It was literally the only thing we could get him to eat or drink for probably multiple days. It is not juice. It is definitely soda, just so you know.
All the vitamins, totally organic. Then the middle picture is just riding down the street, and that's everybody's on motorcycles. And those little places you see, those little shops, people usually live in them, close them up for the night. And anywhere you go on the streets of Bangi, this is exactly what it looks like. Just the names are changed to of the stores and what they would sell. And this is their basically mall. This is where they go to shop. You know, one shop will specialize in luggage, and you're sitting there thinking, why does anybody want luggage in Bangi? But anyway, it was interesting. And one shop would have cloth for making clothes. One shop would have this. Each shop sort of specialized, but that's how you shopped when you went there. Just beware of the food, just warning you, if you go. Now, you're driving down the road. This is on the way to or from Cebu. And you're driving down the road, and at first you see on the side of the road, you think, well, those are very strange, you know, paint markings to mark off the edge of the road. And then after a while, you figure out it's more than that. And actually, that little gozo that they were eating, which I couldn't believe they were eating, that's where it comes from, the side of the road. That's how they make it. See, all the people in the rural areas make all this food. In this case, they grow and grind and then dry the gozo and sell it to the big city. So that's what they were eating, and they were trying to convince me it was good and I should eat it too.
It is a cassava root, actually, is what it is. So they take that, they soak it for a couple days to get the toxins out of it, apparently. You don't want to eat it on day one or day two. I don't know how they tested that and found that out. But day three, you're good. And then they dry it out, and this is their drying process. They like chop it up. They lay it all out on the side of the road. Sometimes they'll put it on the roof. And then once they are done with that, they'll grind it up kind of into a powder and boil it, which is how you get this sort of very, something similar to like mashed potatoes, if it were made of Play-Doh, maybe is a good way to describe it, with a little bit of sandy, gritty texture from the road. So,
yeah, I was careful not to throw my gum out the window.
All right, I think this one's going to be some driving footage.
So yeah, just endless shops.
Yeah, so this is the night we got in from the airport. Adam was in that video was commenting that all the lights were new because they used to not have the lights apparently there. That was like, wow, big deal. So let me go to the next one here. I think this is the next video.
That little motorcycle that's kind of a carriage in the front. I wanted one of those. That was my favorite vehicle.
As you can tell, there's no stop signs or stop lights. So it's just sort of, they all beep at each other to be like, hey, I'm over here. You know, it's just constantly how they do it.
Yeah, you can look up building codes and they're work in progress. Same with traffic laws. I don't think there are any. Just drive at your own risk, and that's that.
Yeah.
So, this is Sabut. To the left is Donna Bixby with one of the newest little babies that was deposited with them. She's in the house that she lives in the living room, and then in the top middle is all the babies, infants are actually in her house. She got moved out of her room, and they put the babies and infants in there. And then down on the bottom left is just some of the kids in the courtyard around her house gathering around. On the right is the porch on her house, and it becomes where they keep all the babies during the day, all the infants. So they're everywhere.
Yeah, it's a lot of babies in that one house for sure. I think this one is in the inside of her house. Let's see. So they were still decorated for Christmas when we got there.
There's a hut hanger in French.
Yep.
And there's Samuel. That was Samuel. He's the official CEO of the place. Again, he's just a really good guy. Definition of meekness. Mm-hmm. And yet he's very, very capable.
He also loves going out. He talked to us a lot about going out and showing the Jesus film to some of the local villages. So that's another thing. He's got this like cool backpack with all of the film equipment, and he goes around and shows the Jesus film and teaches.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was a really, really neat guy. So they do a nightly devotions with the orphans that are there. So that's kind of a little bit. They do some singing and they do a little bit of just kind of a devotional teaching time, which I think is what the next video is. Donna asked him to do the devotion, so you can hear him giving the devotion in Sango, which is their language. So that's the next video. And here we go.
Dagina Zia Negati Tenengo Mene. Tenengo Mene is Negoka.
Is that?
Negati Zoko. Zoko Oko. Attentatene. Number two. Manati. So you are Gina in the tail. Tomana Alasara Nozo. Alasara Ange is the Alasara Shupa.
So they've got kids ranging from, you saw her holding the tiniest one that was just maybe a couple few months old, up to some of the girls there I think were like around 13, 14 years old, and then they've got some who are older and have kind of gone into school, and they're still supporting and helping them some through paying through some of their expenses as they're trying to go through school. I'm trying to go to the next one here.
Okay, to the top left is the porch, and this was sort of the morning staff meeting. I'm still sick as can be. And just before the staff meeting, I was asked to give a little message, so... Again, they keep asking me out of nowhere to give messages, and I'm like, I can't even think. I can't even stand hardly. But it was good. Now, all the people there, the staff, they're called aunties, and they take care of the children. Many of them probably aren't Christian, but they're there helping. They get paid. It's an important job for them. And there's, did they say 100 staff?
I guess including them, yeah, I think it was close to that.
Yeah, about 100 staff. I'm sure they alternate. We saw some of their housing later as we were leaving, but those are the aunties. The bottom left is in front of the main dormitory, which is an old building left from the first missionaries that went there were Swedish Baptists. And they sort of actually still own the land. Jonathan's house rents from them or leases from them. In the middle is the entryway to the main dormitory. And I think on the left in the dormitory are the girls, and on the right, I think, are the boys.
Yeah, the boys, actually, a lot of them sleep down in Samuel's house, too. Mm. So that's where they have some.
Yeah, some of them there. Then on the top right, as you're looking up the hill, is the dormitory. You can sort of see the entrance. And this is where all the infants were, and there's two buildings, and then this is sort of a little space in the middle, and that's where they take care of the kids during the day. And at the bottom is the girls' dormitory. Now, notice, Gwen, how they fold the sheets, just letting you know. Very nice, very attractive, the way they fold their sheets. So that I was taken with that. At first I thought, gosh, what is this? And so they have to fold their sheets like that every morning. So kids, if you think your parents are unreasonable, we'll take you to that dormitory for a week, see how it goes, see if you can fold sheets.
So I think this one's going to be walking around outside Jonathan's house. So that's Donna's house, the white building there. You can see they're doing some, heating some water. Oh, here we go. I got to pause this. So this is where they're doing their potty training for all of the children. You see this? This is actually a new outhouse that was being built. They were like putting metal sheets up on it as we were leaving. Because a lot of times these kids sort of don't, like, they just kind of are used to going outside, even, you know, the little girls and stuff. So this was a new addition that Donna had pushed for, like, to have sort of this little outhouse situation. So yeah,
and up toward the top toward the right, there's a stack of wood. That's what they cook with. That's how that goes into their stoves. There's the dormitory again. Houses for the infants. Thatched roof.
All
This is behind the dormitory. That's where they're doing their cleaning, the laundry.
She's grinding the gozo.
And yeah, where we're walking in the background was the kitchen, where they use the wood for the stoves.
And I think this one's going to be up on the... So this is the second story of the dormitory, kind of a little patio, so you can kind of get a view of the land that they have and where it's at.
And those are the kitchens where they cook things.
That one down there is where they keep the goats, down there. Mostly in the upper 80s to 90s, I think, because it's their summer kind of time, although they don't, their winter just means it's more like there's times when it rains and times when it doesn't rain. It's always generally hot. It's just whether it's like humid or not. So, yeah.
Now, as you saw that, it was sort of panning around. It's up on a hill. And we stayed in... Yeah. Samuel's house, and the night we were there, we were out in the front of his house, and they were burning off a huge portion on another big big hill down the road, and it was just lighting up the whole sky. It was beautiful. There's Samuel's house where we stayed, down toward the bottom there. There's a porch we were at. Now, this was my favorite. I didn't know... I was kind of out of it, but I didn't know what all the plans were. So they said, okay, come on, everybody get in cars. And they took us down to their school. And the school is having their morning assembly. And there's about 450 kids there all together. And they are all lined up. And I'm going to tell you what, they behave themselves. That was for sure. And so that was actually a treat to see that. And they sung a number of songs. The classroom there to the right is a classroom we were going through, and to the left, same classroom, there's their chalkboards, and that's the technology that they function with.
Yeah, and all these kids like walk in from the neighboring villages that are nearby, so that's kind of how they all come. And then one of the things Donna explained to us that they is the major draw for their school is that they actually feed them lunch. And it's a lot of times one of the only sort of, you know, solid meals that they might get in a day. And so the kids like don't miss a day. Like they always come because they opted to start trying to, you know, feed the kids lunch. So these aren't all like residents of, you know, Jonathan's house. They're all kind of kids from the community who all come in and are at the school.
Yeah. Now I'm sick again in this picture, and guess what they asked me to do? Impromptu speak to this assembly, and I'm like, oh, what am I supposed to say? Anyway, it was good though. I was just thrilled to be there, sick but thrilled. That was the highlight.
So I think this is their national anthem.
Yep. Oh, that lady. Well, we'll see her again. Lady in the purple. You didn't want to mess with her. She was tough. There, yeah.
So they have these, like... songs and things of greeting that they've practiced, that they use, because Jonathan's house does get a decent number of visitors that come from Western countries, and so, you know, you could tell there's sort of a little bit of a like routine that they have learned and kind of gone through. But it was neat to see.
Okay, now this is the clinic. The top left picture is behind the main building. The top middle picture is where you get sort of admitted, and then they triage you, and if it's just a little, you know, got to sew up a cut or something, they'll do it there. But if not, then you go back toward the back, all the way to the on the top left picture, all the way to the left, sort of in the distant background, is the maternity ward, and then the sort of building to the front of that picture is the what would you say, the inpatient ward. You get admitted, and that's where you go. Bottom left is, oh, that's the maternity ladies, I think.
Yeah, they had all had babies within the last 25, I think maybe just the night before.
Yeah, the night before.
All those babies had been born, and they were all sharing a room together. Yeah. So.
And they asked us to come into one room, and there were still ladies there, just had their babies. I'm like, I don't know if I want to be here, but they thought it was great, so. The picture to the right is two very hard cases. This is going to be those that are, quote, admitted to the hospital. And they're praying with them. There's a man sitting on the bed on the right. And he's rural. He's from the bush. And you can't see the baby. The baby's on the bed next to him. The baby has congestive heart failure. It's about 6 months old. And the struggle, you can see he's just intense. It's more than just that. He's having to make a decision. Do I take my baby to Bangi? Do I let them take my baby to Bangi to get fixed there because they couldn't help our baby here? Or do I trust the local witch doctor? And he's having to make that decision. And he decided for the witch doctor, and the baby pretty much died. On the left is a little girl. That's her father sitting next to her. She's about 9 years old. We knew her name, but did you ever get that name, Gwen?
Iris.
Iris is her name. She's about 9 years old. She had typhoid. People in this country think that that's all been, you know, oh, we don't have to worry about typhoid. Yes, you do. She had a perforated bowel. They ended up taking her to the local hospital. They don't trust the local hospital that much because there's a lot of racial stuff that goes on. They said that they would send, women who needed C-sections, they'd send them up to the hospital, and a higher percentage were dying there than when they were doing it themselves. So they, I think, brought it back locally to do it themselves. And that's typical. There's a lot of, hey, we don't like this group of people. We don't like that. They're going to get less care. They eventually sent Iris to the hospital, and she died. So both of those children there died. One because of their local animism, religion, and the other one just because that's what happens in CAR.
And this, it just was the reality of just seeing the weight of the people who deal with this stuff, like, every single day. Just because this is not like a unique day at the clinic to have these types of cases. It's something like they're making these, you see they're all in that center top picture, they're all trying to discuss, you know, what to do with these different cases, because for a lot of them, these people can't pay for any of these medical services that are coming to them, so they're discussing, okay, do we have what we need to be able to pay to take this person, and then you offer to take them to the Bangi hospital, are they going to accept it or not, and trying to convince them to let you take their kids to the hospital. And that's just the type of stuff that they're dealing with all on a regular basis. The man in the red is the doctor, the head doctor there. And so he's overseeing everything that's kind of happening at the clinic.
In the blue, is that Samuel?
And Samuel, sure. In the blue.
Yeah. He's got his hat off.
Yeah. Okay, I think this is traveling again, maybe back from Jonathan's house. Let's see. Yeah.
Now, this is typical. Every 3 or 4 miles, this is what you would see. This is a rather large village, and the houses look neat, you know, well-constructed, but they're all made of mud brick. So every now and then, you'll just see a bunch of bricks, because every so many years, those mud bricks disintegrate, and they have to rebuild their houses.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and that's what it looks like. As soon as you get out of the big city, that's the only thing you see for, you know.
Can you play that again? Can we maybe catch
yeah.
The stacked I'm looking for something that's was typical.
These bricks over there, is that what you're talking about? That's
yeah,
there?
There's a little, right next to the tree, right in there. That's their sort of brick-making place, I guess. I don't know. Yep. They had them everywhere.
Yep.
And then I'm looking for the stacked wood.
Oh, yeah.
May not be in this one.
Yeah, it may not. This person's probably here selling little wares and different things, so you'll have a lot of people who are just out by the road selling various different little things. Yeah, I don't think I saw what you were looking for, but you were talking
about
the wood.
Another one I think we have.
Oh, yeah, there's one more that I think is the, let me see if this is.
Look at this. On top.
All right, I'm going to pause this right here for you guys. Hold on, let me go back. So this is the common sight.
Yeah.
So this is part of the issue is they have so few vehicles and cars in CAR because they can't get them imported in, and they, you know, have, it's hard to get the parts, all this type of stuff. So they have all of these taxi drivers who are driving what looks like the equivalent of a 1990s Corolla, basically. And then they put these crazy roof racks on the top and stack all of these bags of, like, their different, it's like rice and all this stuff. And then they get about 8 or 10 people up on top of that. And then that's how they go flying down the roads. 'Cause this is the only way you get from the rural areas into town without having to walk multiple days because there's no vehicles. So, I mean, as you can imagine, there are car accidents that happen. And if you're in that sort of a situation, it's just like, it's carnage. So Donna gave us lots of stories about these sorts of things. But that just kind of illustrates, you know, and this is all normal. They don't see it as like a desperate situation, but they don't, you know, they just, this is the only option they have. So, yeah.
And by the way, Donna's a great storyteller, and she told us just, she would just tell you constantly. She was just a wealth. She should have been a tour guide. She just had a wealth of information about the place.
I'm going to go ahead.
Okay. Now, here we are at what's called a Katpa. And this is a group that does translation for really all over CAR. On the left, we're looking, well, on the left, you're looking at the imprimir. That's the printing place. So we went in and talked to the printer to see about sending stuff to them that they could print for Andre. And it just worked out as totally prohibitive, the expense. So we won't be doing printing there. We didn't accomplish it, but we did find out whether it would work or not.
Yeah, that room is essentially a guy. It's the only air-conditioned room, but it's a guy in there surrounded by about 14 different copy machines from 1987, basically. And he just, like, prints stuff. Yeah, so that's about the level of what they have available.
Yeah. On the right is the board of all the projects that Akatba is doing. And I don't, you can't really see all the languages and what's the, where are they in the translation process. And the board actually, you can, has two-sided. This is just one side. And you see SIL, that's where Adam Huntley actually works with SIL. He's a sort of a contractor through SIL.
Yeah, so you see the different languages. So top to bottom there are all different languages that are spoken in CAR. And then there's dates next to each one for when the New Testament is completed, when the Old Testament is completed, all that type of stuff. So you can see the bottom half of the board is mostly empty because they don't have, there's still, I mean, so much. And they have to do assessments on which dialects and languages they want to spend the time translating because some languages are growing in prominence, some are sort of shrinking. So there's a lot of technical stuff that goes into their decisions on which languages they tackle and then the whole process. Some of them aren't even really written languages. They're mostly oral. So then they have to figure out a writing system before they can even like get it, start doing translation. So it's a very slow going process.
There's Maria Lean with Moise, her adopted son. And we're back at the MEF, the Bangi Hotel, as we might call it.
Yeah, and Moise was having some issues where she was having to continually bring him into Bangi because he was having blood transfusions because, was it his blood pressure or something was, like, would always get really low.
One of his blood parameters.
Yeah, so they didn't know what the problem was yet, and so they are still trying to assess best ways to kind of help him. So there's a lot of, you know, medical expense that she has to bear the burden of that too, in addition to taking care of her parents, who are also getting much older. She is getting older herself, also having issues with her vision because she tried to have some sort of eye surgery and that I think did not go well. So she is doing so much good work, but it was obvious she is tired, and it's a lot. She's bearing a lot of weight for sure, but good work.
And there's our again a picture of our 4-star, 5-star hotel. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't be able to see; you'd have to see it close up. But there's that wall. The left picture is the wall, and on top of the wall, every wall of every place, Akadva, wherever you go, there's big walls. And then on the tops of the walls, they have spike glass sticking up, and then they have barbed wire. So that's life in Bangi. So our objectives, we did meet Andre. We delivered hut hangers. We had teaching times with him. We learned CAR survival, or lack of it. Visited Jonathan's house, figured out that printing was not going to work for them. And we met with Marie-Lene. So we pretty much accomplished almost everything we wanted to do.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty much the end of this slide presentation. There's obviously a ton of photos and videos and things that I wasn't able to get in here. I'm planning to, I've already put together a folder where I'm gonna put a link in the Realm where everybody can kind of go through and look through the different photos and videos kind of at their own speed. I know some of them were kind of small on the screen too, so that way now hopefully with the context that we've given you, you can kind of see, understand what you're looking at when you go through the different photos. But yeah.
It's 12:30.
Oh, yeah. We're done.
We done? All right.
We're done.
So no time for questions, but you can obviously come to us and ask us questions. We'll be happy to answer.
Yeah. Anything. Does anyone have like a pressing question?
What's next?
Okay, and that's, yeah. So next is, Andre wanted to get into the fish pond business. He actually has some land in Berberati. But the Lord gave him a dream, a significant dream, and told him, nope, you stay preaching the gospel, stay focused on the gospel. So I think we want to, what we do, and it just came up recently, we don't post it, at least we didn't post this one. He goes on evangelistic journeys, I guess the best way to call it. Well, he'll go 2 weeks around to villages. And in order to do that, he has to have funding. So he'll pop up and say, I want to do he doesn't say I want to. He says, we're going to do an evangelistic journey next week. It's going to be great. He lists out all the things, and we're like, okay, we got to get some money to him quick. And we kind of, because we've been so busy about other things, we missed his last journey. I looked at it. Someone else looked at it. But we didn't get his funding to him, so we're going to get some funding to him. About $250 will finance one of his evangelistic journeys. And he goes, and he usually sends pictures back and everything. So we want to fund that one immediately. We want to get him a new motorcycle so that they can have two, because when they go on the evangelistic journeys, he usually goes with someone, and they carry equipment with them. He carries his speaker. He's got his microphone, and he plays his music, and he preaches, and there's all these dirt huts around, and all these people there, some of them dancing. It's really a thing. So he's an evangelist, big time. So we want to continue funding that for him. We'll try to keep everybody apprised of that, because we get notified and we're kind of in the middle of something. We're like, okay, how do we post this to the brethren? Do better at posting it on Realm. Secondly, and this is kind of a long-range thing, the fish ponds are off, so we prayed for fish ponds, and the Lord answers, no fish ponds. So the other thing was being able to be in touch with them more readily, because right now the connection that we have, it's 19.2 connection is what you get, kilobytes, not megabytes, kilobytes. So interacting with him over the internet is just really not a possibility. We've tried it and it just doesn't work. So what we'd like to do is get a Starlink. It's tricky getting it in there because governments don't like Starlinks, because militias who are in rebellion can use Starlinks to coordinate military attacks and stuff. So they kind of frown on Starlinks there, but we'd like to get them a Starlink where we could have a high-speed connection. What we didn't talk about is when we were doing his ordination, on the left was a group of kids. I was going to point it out, but sort of forgot. And they're part of what they call the English Club. They're learning English, so we could actually talk to them in English. And they are doing pretty good, but he teaches them English. And they actually wrote some songs for us and sang them while we were there with the djembe and everything. Now, I don't know that they'll get published, but it was really nice that they wrote songs for us. And so it was a big deal for us to be there with them. So we'd like to be able, using Starlink, to have classes with them, because our great concern is, what about the next generation? What about the next generation of preachers, teachers? How can we help do that? And if we could end up establishing a conference with, like, the man from Gramari, preachers that they know from Berberati, NOLA, other places, Gambola, they could have a conference and we could go through a topic of justification or sanctification with them. But we would have to have Starlink to do that, or have someone go there, which, yeah, get ready for the Gozo and for the Jurassic Park chicken. So that's what's next. So those are things we'll be praying about and moving forward with. We thank the Lord for this connection, because according to Donna Bixby, that we have been put in touch with a man like Andre is unheard of in that place. Lots of churches, but as Paul said in Philippians chapter 2, they all seek their own things and not the things of Jesus Christ. And that's just rampant there. So, and the clinic, the Cebu, they want to enlarge the clinic, and they want to build a real dormitory. The one they're in is from, you know, like 1912 or something. So, anything else?
Where are you going again?
As soon as I can put in an order for 20 of those orange drinks to be there when I get there.
Yeah, no immediate plans.
Yeah. We hope the Starlink would eliminate the need to go there, because it is it's one long trip.
If the one thing, though, is if we were to do that, we either have to find somebody going there or carry it there ourselves, because it's not like you can just put Andre's address on a package and send it there. Like, there was a package that showed up at NEF that we sent in when was the date?
10 years
ago. 10 years ago.
We sent a package.
And somebody walked in with it as if it had just arrived. And we're like, we didn't even know what it was. Like, we weren't expecting mail. So, yeah. It's the mail is a little spotty, to say the least. Yeah.
Yeah, so Starlink. All right. Well, let's just close in prayer, and then we can go have some fellowship. Heavenly Father, again, we just thank you so much. You put us in touch with this blessed brother, Andre, who is a faithful minister of yours. And Lord, just pray you'd bless his evangelism there. We know how unstable that country is. Next week there could be a coup and people being slaughtered and murdered all over the place. So, Lord, we just pray you'd preserve your saints there. Give them just gobs of faith and hope and love. Lord, we just pray that the truth of your word, the clarity of your word, you would just open that to them, that they would know everything they need to know to stand firm in that one of the most challenging places on earth. And Lord, just bless them again with real joy, real hope of the gospel. Make all of your saints there to be true witnesses, to be faithful witnesses, to be effective witnesses of your gospel, and just pray, Lord, you'd send a revival to that country, that you'd push back all the darkness, all the spiritual darkness that has held that country in its grip for a millennia. Lord, this is a spiritual war, and just pray you'd push back darkness, enable Andre and others around him to bring your gospel, enable Andre to be a good pastor, a faithful shepherd of the saints that are there. Lord, enable them to see body life, that it's not just about what Andre does and says, but it's about the whole body, that they're all responsible to be true believers. They're all responsible to live out their faith in real love and fellowship with one another according to your word, that you would open your word to them in such a plain way. And Lord, just pray you'd send a revival to that country and raise up more ministers like Andre, men who are faithful ministers of the gospel, men who could be counted on, men who stand firm in truth. And Lord, again, we just thank you so much that we've been in touch with him and have been able to help contribute to your work there. Pray, Lord, you'd open it up. We pray, Lord, that we could, at least in our minds, what we think would be just good to have a Starlink there. And Lord, you'd open every door for it and it'd become useful. And pray, Lord, you'd use it to unify ministry there, unify pastors there who truly love your word and truly see and know and understand what their mission and purpose is. Lord, just save sinners everywhere in that place. In Jesus' name, amen.